What's going on, guys? Before the podcast starts, I just want to say thank you to everybody who has been supporting our brand. We are now the Fitness Informant new brand of the year. We just won the award yesterday. I am extremely happy about it. And I just want to thank you all for those of you who voted, those of you who have been buying our products, those of you who have been leaving reviews. I appreciate it very much. Also, we have a lot of new clothing coming out this weekend. So please follow at Hostile Supps or go to hostile.com with two S's, obviously. And check out, we have some pants, shorts, and we got two new styles of hoodies coming out. They're pretty awesome. And I'm really happy with the designs. And the pants and shorts are a little bit thicker, so they're really good for winter. Thank you guys for everything. It's been amazing. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Wesley Vissers, how are you, sir?
I'm very good. I'm very excited for Olympia. And I really want to say I really love your podcast, so I'm really honored to be on here.
I've heard you told me, I think I read somewhere, I think either you posted or your fans, you probably have the best fans out of anybody I know, because they've been messaging me off the hook for the last like three. they didn't know that me and Hiro had already spoken. Uh-huh. And for the last 3 days, I've been getting repeatedly, get Wesley on the show. So I didn't want to tell anybody because I like to make it a surprise, but we already had it planned.
Yeah.
It's so your fans are good guys. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm happy to get you on, man. I want to say something. I don't hear your name enough. I think you have an amazing physique, and I think you're going to do extremely well this weekend. Why do you think you're not being talked about as much as you should be?
Well, honestly, I do like the underdog position this time. The first time I was talked about quite a lot because I won my pro card in the same year that I won my first pro show and qualified for the Olympia all in 1 year. So then there was a lot of hype behind me.
Yeah.
And that brings a lot of pressure with it, of course. Mm-hmm. So this time I kept quiet at the beginning, especially for qualification for this Olympia. I didn't even say I was going to do a show at all. Yeah. And it gave me more freedom to do whatever I wanted, to post whatever I wanted, then just go do the show. And then I happened to win it. Yeah. So that mentally was very much easier for me. So less of a burden. So I think that after the Romania Pro, which I won in last year, I once again didn't really mention much about what I was going to do in terms of when I was going to start my prep and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I do notice, and this is true about social media, in the off season, I simply don't look nearly as good as during prep. So people just don't care at that time.
Yeah, no.
And I only start to look good in the last, like, month before the prep. Then that's what people start to notice my physique, and they're like, oh damn, he's coming back, he's really good, he's really improved, even though the improvements had already been made in the off season, but no one can see it because there's no conditioning to show it. So and I do think, because the first Olympia that I did was a disappointment to myself and to the fans, that therefore they don't bring as much hype to my physique anymore, because they're like, well, we already saw what he could do at the previous Olympia, so maybe this Olympia will just be the same thing.
Yeah.
Until I showed my physique what it is right now, people are starting to believe in me again and put me alongside with some top names, which I really, really am, you know, incredibly appreciative about. Yeah. But still, I really love that underdog role to, you know, to go into the Olympia without much attention. But being part of the social media atmosphere, there's really no choice but to show yourself enough. Yeah.
So you said a whole bunch there. So I'm going to try and pull apart some of that. First thing is, I do notice that when we're not prepping, nobody cares. And you're wearing a hoodie in the gym, or you're a little bit puffy in the off season, nobody gives a shit. It's one of the struggles as a bodybuilder or classic or whatever, as someone who competes, because I think we all like the attention, and we like people recognizing our hard work. But then nobody cares when we're actually doing the hard work, because we don't look so amazing, right? So it's just kind of a struggle mentally to handle. Are you okay with those months where nobody's liking your stuff or commenting or like patting you on the back every day? Are you okay with that?
I'm okay with it, but you always have to be honest to yourself as well. Mm-hmm. When I'm on social media, especially Instagram, you can see the amount of likes you get. And I want to get at least above a 10,000 like mark. That's for me like the limit I want. On most of my pictures, when I think, okay, this one looks pretty good, and I don't get that 10,000, it's always going to be like, okay, why don't they like this post as much as the previous ones? So, and then all of a sudden one of them goes above 20,000. I'm like, why do they like this one so much now? So sometimes it's like a mystery, but I do notice the trend going up and up as you go into prep. Mm. So yeah, in the off season, you try to do different things to get noticed, because ultimately my company, my brand is also attached to how I look. Mm-hmm. So I can't do nothing in the off season. I still have to post some content, but I do notice there's a lot less attention towards you in the off season. So you try to fit it in with other other stuff.
Wesley, how old are you?
27.
Okay, can I tell you, you're probably the most honest guy I've had on this channel. You're the you're the first guy I've had on this channel. Okay, first of all, I talk to a lot of guys about pressure, and a lot of them, maybe they're not like me, but most of them, I shouldn't say all of them, but most of them say they don't feel the pressure, which is mm-hmm. baffling to me, because I always felt it when I was competing.
Yeah.
But no one has ever said to me, I want to get 10,000 likes, and if I don't get 10,000 likes, I'm disappointed. You're the first person I've ever heard say that. So, where did you come up with that number, and what does it do to you if you get 9,000 likes? Are you bummed out?
Yeah, but it motivates me when I get below 10,000 likes. I want to get that next post to be at least 10,000. So what I then do is, if I had a post in mind to post, a certain picture, that was like the one that had 9,000 likes, I'm like, okay, this one would not be good enough. I need to post something that shows a little bit more physique, little bit more striations, a better pump, which I maybe didn't even want to show, because I don't like to show everything of my physique before the contest. But then I'm like, I do want to keep that, you know, not really hype going, but I do want to keep that momentum going into the show now that I do have it, because it's not just about the likes to me, because as I mentioned, there's a whole other thing attached.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, the more attention my posts get, the more I'm going to make in the end as well. And it's literally the thing I do to provide for my family at the same time. So it's all intertwined, basically. So okay. the higher the amount of likes, the better it is going to be for that as well.
What's the lowest amount of likes you've gotten in the last 6 months?
Well, some posts that really don't do well if you almost show nothing of your physique and you're showing like a lifestyle picture or something. That's not really what my page is about, but sometimes I do. And then you can get like 3,000 likes or something. Mm-hmm. But then I expect it. I don't expect to have that 10,000 likes in there. So, you know, if I post a picture of my physique that I think looks good, and then I don't get the amount of likes I expect, then it motivates me. Okay, I have to do something different here, because I thought that was going to do well, and it didn't do as well as I thought. So, but pictures, I do realize it.
Isn't it absolutely crazy the way we measure our success now?
Yeah.
It's so crazy, because I can't, you know, like thinking from my own experience before, we never had that before. Like,
no.
Before social media, you didn't know. Well, not even you didn't know, you didn't care. You just looked as good as you. I mean, in the off season, you were fat because you were bulking, or not fat, but a little bit chubby or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but you didn't care because you didn't have to post a photo and get likes, and it wasn't connected to your business. And it wasn't, you know what I mean? Like, it's very, very, things are so different now that you're kind of saying it out loud. And it's like, nothing you're saying is untrue, but you're the first person to say it out loud. And it's weird when you hear it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I do think there's another layer to it, because we are bodybuilders, and most bodybuilders like to think in numbers as well, like our weight, our calories, the reps and sets. Yeah. But most importantly, the progressive overload in the gym. I know that you're following a little bit of Jordan Peters' training style.
Yeah.
And so am I, actually, for the last year.
Yeah.
And there, the numbers, the increase in numbers over time is important. So if you compare it to a post, if one workout, you're all of a sudden not making those PRs or not maintaining the amount of weight and reps you did before, you're also going to be disappointed.
So you're looking for...
I'm looking for progressive overload in my social media as well, because then you know progressively you're actually improving yourself also on that front. So maybe that's also a bodybuilder thing.
This is amazing. I love that you're saying this shit, because it's you know why? People aren't going to understand why I'm so happy about this, but I am, because this is exactly how we all think, but no one's ever like put it out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so you said you had a family. How many, are you married? Do you have kids?
I'm not married, but I do have a baby son. He's about 14 weeks old. So in the middle of prep, he actually came to be, which was, of course, a very special moment. It's indescribable.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're still in prep. And I noticed that when he, you know, he still doesn't sleep all night, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
So while at the same time, I'm now close to 3 weeks from home, more than 2 weeks already. So I'm getting a better night's sleep. That's the only benefit.
Yeah.
But the disadvantage is you have to miss your family. And especially if you have a newborn son, it's different from all the other contests.
Yeah.
But the prep has been very different regardless because of him. So it puts a different dimension to why you're doing what you're doing. Because as a bodybuilder, it's pretty selfish what you're doing. Usually it's based for yourself and everybody around you has to adapt your lifestyle. Mm-hmm. But right now, the goal, when I win, the better I do, the better it'll be for the family as well, eventually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's also an extra motivation added to what I'm doing.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, you know, after your son, right? Your daughter, son.
Son, yeah.
Sorry, I lost. After your son was born, I'm assuming that, did you train harder? Like, did it give you like an extra gear in the gym or an extra gear when you were, you know, if you didn't want to do your diet that day or something, did it make you feel like you wanted to work harder? Because like you said, now there's a new motivation.
Yeah, it did, but it did require some balance because even though mentally you really want to work harder with less sleep and you simply feel more tired quickly because you get less sleep on prep and you can't compensate it with more calories or anything else.
Yeah.
So you basically lose an edge during prep, but the edge that you gain is the extra motivation because you're working for him. So not during the training, but especially during cardio, it was easier to finish.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
normally you're like halfway, you're like, oh, this is going to take a while before I'm done. But now when I'm thinking about him, and then I'm going to keep walking until I'm done with the cardio.
Yeah.
So that was an easier part for me. And usually cardio is the most dreaded thing for me to complete, usually, because I don't really mind the diet or the training, because I love both. I'm very interested in both.
Yeah.
But the cardio is always something added on top, which to me doesn't really deliver a lot of fun or entertainment. So you then get an extra push to finish it, that's always nice.
That's so weird for me. You know, I had Hunter on, and Hunter said the same thing. And I'm like, I love cardio. Am I the only one who loves cardio? I think I'm the only one.
Well, I like cardio in the morning before breakfast because I can then look forward to the breakfast afterwards. So it's like a routine. The cardio is fun because you will get rewarded at the end. And the breakfast is one of my favorite meals of the day. And it does allow you to clear your mind, think about how you're going to structure the rest of the day and stuff like this. But still, if you wake up and normally in the off season, you can get started with breakfast right away sometimes.
Yeah.
So if you're not really... Yeah, but when you then wake up and you're in prep and you're tired and hungry and then you still have to do your cardio, it's always going to be like not as fun compared to want to train or a diet, for example.
I got you. So you got your qualification for the Olympia at the Romania?
Yeah.
Okay, so you've had, Romania was last November, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
So you've had a whole year just to worry about this one show.
Yeah, that's true. But usually I start like 20 weeks before a contest with a prep. And the Olympia wasn't announced to be in December yet before I started my prep for the September Olympia.
That's right.
So
that's
I actually had a little bit of a prep for like 3-4 weeks. And then they announced, it's going to be moved to December.
Yeah.
So it kind of was like a break from the off season that I had.
Yeah.
So it was a complete year, but at the same time, it wasn't really.
Yeah.
So, but still, it was more time than for any other show I've ever done as a pro.
Yeah. So you said you had a lot of hype. Where did you place at your first Olympia? Was your first Olympia 2019?
2018.
2018. So where did you place in 2018?
I was shared 14th place. So, you know, of course, I watch your podcast. You're always saying, well, that might sound bad to a lot of people. In fact, you can be quite proud of it because then you can say, well, I'm 14th of the world.
Yeah.
So that's also pretty amazing. But I realized I wasn't there in my best shape I could be. I looked way better at the London Pro that I won my pro card at. and the Chicago Pro before. So I looked worse at the Olympia, which is never good as a bodybuilder, because the judges, even if you might be better than some people, if you're worse than yourself, you're going to be placed lower regardless. That's what I truly believe about improving yourself and placing as high as possible in shows like that, especially the Olympia, because then I was in the elevator in the Orlando hotel there. Orleans Hotel.
Yeah.
And a judge told me, you have the shape, you have the lines, but you have to bring the conditioning. That's what he told me.
Yeah.
And I missed my peak. It was the fourth show in a row. And I just couldn't peak the same way as I did for the other shows. And I just, it's like literally a desert in Las Vegas and in the Netherlands. It's quite cold. So the difference was quite immense.
Yeah.
So I just couldn't peak the right way. And I just didn't show my conditioning. So that's when the hype pretty much fell all the way down.
Yeah.
And from there, I had to prove myself again.
But was it just physical, or was there a mental aspect to not being able to peak? Like, I mean, you turned pro relatively quickly, right?
Yeah. The first time I did Classic Physique.
Because I remember you showing up on the scene. I'm like, who the hell is this guy? You showed up out of nowhere. And then all of a sudden, you started winning a bunch of shows. And I was just wondering, like, you said before you were talking about pressure, and I was, was it strictly physical, the reason why you missed your peak, or was just something mental, like to all the pressure and knowing it was the Olympia and your first time there? Was that part of the reason why you maybe missed your peak as well?
It was mostly physical, because I even though it's the Olympia, I was very excited because I wanted to be compared to Chris Bumstead, because I knew his physique, and he was number two in the world at that time.
Yeah.
Actually, we don't look alike, but we have the same similar look, especially when you look at Breon, that look is completely different from mine.
True.
But at least I could compare a bit to Chris. So I was like, okay, if I can hit the first call out or at least be compared to him, then I know what I have to do for the next years.
Yeah.
But then I just, hit me mentally when I noticed backstage, I couldn't see the details in my legs that I was used to. Mm-hmm. And that's when I knew, okay, it's pretty much over. I can't do anything anymore about this because, I can't cut any more water. I didn't have anything backstage to help me out. So it was just the shape I was in back then that I had to show on stage. So when I did go on stage and I did my introductory routine, everybody could see, my family as well, he's not himself. He's not his confident self. He basically just wanted to get back off stage because I knew I didn't look as good as I could. And that was the most difficult part, because it's the Olympia, exactly the show where you do want to prove yourself and show yourself you're worth it. Yeah. And that's when you're not showing it. So that was the most difficult part.
I know the feeling. So after that, you went on to the Romania Pro. What was the next show after that? No,
after that, in 2019, I did the Arnold Classic in Ohio.
In Ohio, okay.
Yeah.
How'd you do there?
I placed the 10th there. Okay. That was a bit of a controversy because a lot of channels, including Nick Strength and Power and some others, and a lot of other outlets told me, well, maybe 10 a bit low. But I think it was because I placed so badly at the Olympia compared to my potential. And I still didn't fulfill my true potential at the Arnold Classic either. So maybe they just wanted to tell me, okay, this is still not good enough. We want you at your best to place you in the top six, for example.
Yeah.
So maybe they want to push me because they do believe in me. But because of that placing, they're like, okay, you still have to push it more because your physique needs more pop on stage.
Yeah.
And I knew what went wrong at the Arnold Classic as well. I did peak correctly in terms of conditioning, but not with fullness.
Yeah,
because I'm usually one of the taller guys on stage.
Yeah.
And I need to be dominant on stage. I need not only conditioning, but especially fullness.
Yeah.
And my mistake there was I didn't load with any sodium at all.
Oh, God.
So, without sodium, I no matter how many carbs I ate, I couldn't get a pump backstage. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
But that's all things you learn throughout the years as a competitor, that okay, for some people, no sodium works great. They stay full regardless. But for me, it really didn't work. Yeah. So now those things have changed for sure.
So for the Arnold, do you think it was strictly like they judged you fairly and you just didn't peak again properly? Or do you think it was some residual thought from the Olympia? Like they're like, okay, well, he's still not where he needs to be. So let's mark him down.
I wasn't at my very best there.
Yeah.
And I think it's like a combination of like, okay, he is pretty good, but still not good enough for us to give him the confidence that he's a top six guy. We still want them better to really be compared to those top guys, because in the top six was like George Peterson, he won, I believe, and Steve Laurius and all those guys, which are big names, and they have incredible physiques. So to be in that call out, I would have to simply improve myself even more.
Yeah. So you're how tall are you? 6'1"?
6'2¼".
Are you the tallest guy on stage?
Usually I am. Yeah. Sometimes there's one taller guy, but he's not really a name, so to say. Yeah.
So if I think of the taller guys, I think of you, I think of Chris, I think of Steve Laurius. Steve Laurius is a little bit taller, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a little taller, but not as tall as Chris or me.
Okay. So
at least he has a bit of an average, I think.
Yeah. So where do you see yourself? Are you still chasing Chris, or is there somebody else you're chasing, or where do you see yourself this weekend?
Well, I'm not chasing a specific person, especially because right now the top 10 and the top six are pretty much wide open, because a lot of guys who were in their previous year aren't there right now.
Yeah.
But the only guy who is for sure there is going to be Chris. So I do have it in the back of my mind. I know that if I stand next to him, that the differences or the similarities are going to be visible. So that's the only thing I want. That would be, you know, a dream come true, to be honest, to be in the top six, to be compared to the top guys, just to see what the true differences are, to see where I stand among the top guys. Yeah.
What's your weight right now?
I'm allowed to weigh 112 kilos, 247 pounds.
Yeah.
And right now it's about 245, 244.
Oh, so you're under.
Yeah. I was a few days ago still over, but I had a flight and some people hold water and I actually lose water when I'm flying.
Yeah. That happens to me too. Isn't that weird? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's weird.
So I want to show some people your page and what you look like right now. Those who don't know you, if you don't know Wesley, it's Wesley Vissers on Instagram. This is what you're looking like now, right? I mean, this is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I recall you being in this condition before.
No, for sure. This is the best conditioning ever. And in terms of conditioning, what my biggest critique has always been. So that's what I really wanted to work on and get in good condition quite far out, and then only start improving little by little towards the show.
Wait a minute. You said something was your weakest point, but you cut out for a second. Is your just your overall condition, or is there something, a body part?
My overall condition is my biggest critique.
Okay.
Of the judges.
Yeah.
And then secondly, my legs, because I'm quite tall. So my legs need to be on par with my upper body, which is quite full. As you can see, when I get a pump, it can be quite full and round.
Yeah.
So my legs need to be on par with the upper body.
This looks pretty good, man. I haven't seen you in this condition before. I'm really excited to see what you look like on Saturday.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Make sure you don't take the sodium out.
No, it's going to stay in very high. Trust me.
You have a good back, good chest. Upper body is amazing. Do you have any leg shots on here?
No, purposely not.
Why?
Because, because that's the one thing people want to see the most. And honestly, on pictures like this, my legs never look as good as on stage.
Yeah.
So, and that has to do also with the pressure. If I post my legs now, even if they look good, some people will say they won't look good. And that's then it's going to get inside my head. I just want to show a stage next to the people who people believe do have big legs. And if they then compare to them, there's nothing they can say anymore.
This one only got 6,000 likes. Is that okay with you?
See, I show less of my physique and the likes go down. That's how it works.
Okay, let's see. This one's got 25. Holy shit. Yeah. This has got 25,000.
Yeah, that's when I'm happy.
I like that, man. That's hilarious. This one's just under 10.
Yeah,
this
one's
8. We can do this all day long. This is awesome.
Yeah, some of them get quite about 15,000 and are very happy, of course. But
how far out was this?
Well, at least 8 weeks or so.
You have very, very good shape, man. I'm really excited to see what you look like. I want to go back to the pressure conversation. So you purposely, I find it fascinating when somebody is very self-aware of their own self and how they react. So you know, if you build too much hype or you post the wrong thing, it's going to affect you.
Yeah.
So you purposely, when you post, you're not only looking for likes, but you're looking for things that are going to improve your mental well-being, not necessarily pull you back at all.
Yeah, exactly. I want to be in a most positive mindset I can be, because we are human after all. And I do think, like, there's always a conversation in bodybuilding and in pretty much entire social media. You see 100 positive and one negative comment, right? And the only one you see is a negative one.
Yeah.
And I always think about evolution and nature. Why in nature would we care? It's because if you're in a group and one guy says that you are not as good as the rest, he can be a threat to you. So you want to eliminate every single threat so that you're 100% safe to still be part of the group and be accepted by everyone, because it starts with one. And if he's influential enough, it can go to everybody. So that's why we always try to eliminate all the negatives. And it's an everlasting battle, because it will never stop, because it's impossible to be 100% positive in the comments.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why when I post pictures, I try to have them be liked by people as much as possible. So when I know I got a very good pump and I have like 5 screens taken from a video, I just pick the one with where I know from experience, okay, this one will get the best response.
Yeah.
And then I do read pretty much all the comments, but the type of negative comment also matters, because sometimes they're like really picking apart some part of your body. Yeah. And that's what gets to your mind, because you're like, oh, I didn't even think about that. But some negative comments are like just the overall, like, oh, you did it with anabolic or something. Oh, you pumped yourself up.
Yeah.
That's I don't care about, because a lot of people say those things regardless. Even if you walk on the street in the Netherlands, they literally say to your face, oh, one injection and I'll be like you, for example.
Do they really?
So, yeah. The Netherlands, I don't want to talk bad about the culture there.
Yeah. But
the bodybuilding is not accepted there as much as in America and Canada, probably.
Yeah.
When I walk around here in my tank top, for example, people actually come up to you and give you compliments, and because they realize what you had to do to get there.
Yeah.
Even though you might have used some stuff to get there, you know, everybody knows this.
Yeah.
But in the Netherlands, they turn it around. They're like, oh, if I did that like him, I could become you. All the training and diet, they don't even think about it. So that's the big difference. And I think there needs to be a culture shift there. But it's very difficult, because the most popular sports in the Netherlands are endurance-based, where the body, how it looks, doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
So like, you have soccer, you have cycling.
Yeah.
And ice skating. So all of those sports, you don't really care about the body. It's about the performance. And bodybuilding is the exact opposite. It's all about the body and the performance no one really sees.
Yeah.
So I think in America and in Canada, that's where they think about it more logically, in my opinion.
Are you still living there now, or have you moved?
No, I live in the Netherlands still. Yeah,
you still do. Okay. So you've experienced America just coming here for photo shoots or video shoots or shows, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's where I realized that the world isn't all negative, like I experienced.
Do you have any plans to move into like a more bodybuilding friendly country?
Yeah, not specific plans, but I have thought about it. So if I leave the Netherlands, it's not going to be difficult for me. So it's not like I want to stay in the Netherlands. So if I could move to America and everything would go smoothly, I would do it if everything was possible in that way. So because I honestly, when I'm here, I feel at home as well.
Why is that? Just because the bodybuilding culture is better? Is there something about America that makes you feel at ease?
Yeah, it's I love going to the supermarket, for example. And
what's the difference between the supermarket and the Netherlands? Well,
in America, you're all used to having all kinds of enormous supermarkets, but in the Netherlands, it's rare. It's like the local supermarket you have in like a small town in America. That's what they're pretty much all like in the Netherlands. Like this little variety in foods. Like it's getting better and better.
Yeah.
But in America, if you want to be super healthy, you can be. You can go to Whole Foods or Trader Joe's, for example.
Yeah.
But if you in the Netherlands, it's going to be difficult to really pick products like this. And it's not bad, but that's just one of the many examples. America just has a lot more different things to offer, from which I like, especially the cars as well. it's boring in the Netherlands if you walk, if you watch the streets and watch the parked cars. Yeah. Like if you see a Porsche or a Mercedes or something, or a BMW, you're like, whoa, that's special. And here, like they're all over the place, like the exotic cars. So that's also a big difference.
It sounds like the Netherlands is more, how can I say it? More focused. It's not as flashy.
Yeah, exactly. Feel,
like America feels like it's more consumer driven.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever people want, whatever people demand, that's what you have. So
yeah,
people want cars, the cars everywhere. People want grocery stores with tons of options, so they build them.
And so it's restaurants.
Like,
I love those too.
So cars, restaurants, grocery stores. What else? Anything else stand out to you?
Just the vastness of it as well. You got to remember, Netherlands, if you drive for 3 hours, you've been through the entire country.
Okay.
And 3.5 hours maybe.
Yeah.
And there's not that much to see. Like there, it's entirely flat, for example. There's not a lot of interesting nature.
Yeah.
So here you have so much to do, in my opinion, so much to discover, which I haven't done yet at all. I want to visit all states one day.
Yeah.
And I just think there's a lot more to do here as well. So I'll never get bored here, that's for sure. And the weather, especially as well.
Why is it? What's the weather like in the Netherlands?
A lot of rain, a lot of unpredictability, basically like the UK. You've heard James and Ben talk about it. It's just boring, gray weather most of the time. And then when it's summer, it gets searing hot.
Yeah.
And because we're in the Netherlands, we're used to cold weather, we don't have air conditioning standard in our homes.
That's what James said in the UK. There's no air. I'm like, how can you live without air conditioning?
Exactly. I hate the heat when I go to sleep. What I want is a cold, cool room, but it's impossible to achieve in the Netherlands if you don't have air conditioning.
Yeah.
So, for example, right here, I'm nice and cool.
Yeah.
And even Aruba, where I was to quarantine to get here, there were 3 air conditionings in one little apartment. And that was to me already a luxury I never could have imagined.
Yeah.
In the Netherlands, for example. So there's a lot of things that should be standard that are not in the Netherlands that I just think are better here.
I would leave the Netherlands just because of the air conditioning reason. That would be good. That would be enough for me. I'd be like, I'm out of here. Can't take it.
Yeah.
So you had to go. I didn't know that either. So you had to go to Aruba, which is not a bad place to have to quarantine, but
no.
You had to go to Aruba and quarantine, but you didn't have to, you just have to stay in your hotel room, or how did that work?
No. So basically it's called quarantine, but there's different definitions of it. There's a broad definition that I simply had to be in a country that was allowed to go to America for 14 days because I wasn't supposed to be in the Netherlands for 14 days. And after those 14 days, I'm quarantined from the Netherlands and then I'm allowed to go to the USA. So just to be safe, me and actually William Bonack, because we're both from the Netherlands, we had planned the same trip.
Yeah.
We did everything the same, and we ended up here nice and safe. So
you didn't bring your girl or anything, like you're here by
just yourself? Just my dad with me.
Oh, really?
Normally, our entire family pretty much goes.
Yeah.
But with COVID, it's been difficult to arrange all of that. And, you know, with the gyms now back at home again in lockdown, and my girlfriend owns a gym, it's just very difficult to arrange all of this to go away and just, you know.
Yeah. I want to let you go because I know it's Olympia prep time, but you keep bringing up fascinating things. So I have to ask you about your families. You come from the Netherlands. You say, in the Netherlands, bodybuilding sounds like it's frowned upon for the most part, but your family is very supportive.
Yeah.
How did that happen? Have they been supportive since day one?
There's one thing I do have to say about the Netherlands. I don't want to paint everyone the same brush because the bodybuilding community in itself in the Netherlands is amazing. So if you're in a gym that's hardcore and everything is great, of course, but outside of that, it's a little less.
Yeah.
But my family is very supportive because my dad has always been not a true bodybuilder, but he's always been going to the gym. He was a strong, broad guy. And he's actually the one who I looked up to as a young kid that I wanted to be like him. So he took me to the gym with him. And that's basically how it started, how I learned how to perform all the movements in the gym and how to build muscle. And after 7 years, that's when I asked them, do you think it's okay if I do a contest in bodybuilding?
Yeah.
There was a bodybuilder in my gym who asked me, if you are going to do this contest, I'll be your coach for free. I'll do your diet for free, your training for free. as long as you do this contest, because I do think you have the ability to win. Yeah. And I had no idea about that because I watched Mr. Olympia and Ronnie Coleman was the winner and Jay Cutler. And I watched those guys. I was like, I'll never be ready for those guys. I had no idea there were amateur competitions. Yeah. So I really needed to be brought out of that world and into the amateur bodybuilding world to do those contests. But yes, my parents have been very supportive. They've got single contest. And my girlfriend, she has been a female competitor herself, so she understands it. That's why we're even together, because we understand each other.
Yeah.
And we can be very supportive that way. So it's just really amazing.
That's amazing, because more often than not, I mean, I've had a few guys on the show that their parents are supportive, but more often than not, the families don't necessarily understand why we're doing what we're doing or why we have to do, you know, we have to use performance enhancing stuff and all this stuff. So it's nice to hear that your dad and mom are part of your journey. You know what I mean? Like, that's cool.
Yeah,
that
for sure.
Your dad's there with you too. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. They're actually also, my clothing brand Vintage Genetics. They are the ones who are actually packing the clothes and attending to the website. And it's like a literal family. It's literally a family business.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's really all packed together. With trusted people around me. And I have to say, without that social influence and social support, it would have been much more difficult to achieve what I've achieved now.
Yeah. Actually, before you go, I do want to touch on that, because it's important to go over two things. Do you find it hard? I know you said it's easy to compete because your girlfriend is a competitor as well.
Mm-hmm.
But do you find it hard sometimes that she's also a competitor, or do you just never compete at the same time?
No, she actually was a competitor before.
Yeah.
And she did her last contest right after I won my pro card. So we did actually prep together and actually went pretty well, to be honest. We supported each other more than actually fight each other.
Yeah.
But after that, the only thing I find hard is now I'm being more selfish than her, because she doesn't do contests anymore and I keep doing them. So every time I do a contest, inevitably you start to change mentally as well. You're a bit more, well, I don't want to say aggressive, but, you know, not as emotionally available to your girlfriend.
Yeah.
So that makes it a bit more difficult, because I don't like to be a person like that. I want to be there for her. But sometimes it's like you can't control how you feel mentally. So when she asks you something, or she wants your opinion or your attention.
Yeah,
especially the attention. It's just, I want to be there for her. But sometimes it's a little more difficult to give as much energy to her as usual, which that's, to me, the most difficult part.
But I'm going to tell you something that you probably already know, because she's not going to listen to this. And if she does, she's probably not going to listen. She's not going to listen this far, because we're way far into it now. So you're in the best situation possible, because my wife is a competitor. She used to compete as well, too. Mm-hmm. You're in the best possible situation, because she no longer competes, but she understands everything you have to go through to compete.
Yeah.
So you found like the unicorn. That's like the perfect.
That's true. That's why we're together.
Okay. Last thing before you go, Vintage Genetics. It's your clothing brand.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think you believe in it strongly, because I see some of your posts sometimes, and you're very, very big on classic and the classic shape and the, so I'm not even going to ask you, you probably have no ambitions to be an open bodybuilder or anything like that, right?
No, but it is in the back of my mind.
Really?
It's not 0%.
Oh,
because it really depends on the future of open bodybuilding and the future of classic physique. If they want to go more and more streamlined to classic physique and more also streamlined to the open class, with Sean Roden for a while, people thought, that might be the case. And even Brandon Curry has a small waist.
Yeah.
So if they keep going into that direction, and I keep growing myself, and I keep maybe outgrowing the classic physique class, and I don't up the weight limit, then eventually I might have to.
Yeah.
But I do realize that the stepping stone from classic to open is really big for me.
Yeah.
So it would have to take 20, 30 pure pounds of muscle.
I say 20. But
yeah,
I would, when I look at your physique, because I'm looking at these photos while we're talking, like here, I don't want to do this to the people watching. I just want to show them what I'm looking at. So when I look at this, I don't think that's far. The problem with this is I can't see your legs, but but when I look at this upper body, I'm like, I don't feel like there's a ton more muscle needed to be competitive as an open bodybuilder. And I'm not trying to talk you into it or anything. I was always curious because you're very, when I see your captions, I feel like you're very connected to the classic physique and the classic shape. And
yeah,
so I figured, well, there's never going to be any way that this guy goes to open because he loves classic. Mm-hmm. So that's why I was kind of asking the question. But going back to your business, so that's where the business comes from. Obviously, you love the vintage look, the classic look.
And, yeah.
And that's where all that idea came from.
Yeah. Honestly, I would want to be as big as possible, still maintaining that vintage classic look like Arnold Schwarzenegger used to have.
Yeah.
So it's just because classic physique has a weight limit that I have to stay under it. But if it wasn't a weight limit, I would have been way heavier already, I think. But still maintaining that shape. That's, to me, the essence of classic bodybuilding, because Arnold didn't care about how much he weighed. He was the open bodybuilder back then.
Yeah.
But they still had something in mind of how a physique should look. And that's different now with open bodybuilding. So that's the biggest reason why I wouldn't join open bodybuilding now, because the look that I have in mind and the look they have is simply too far apart.
Yeah.
And I want to keep that classic look for myself.
But just to play devil's advocate, because we're talking about it, and again, I'm not trying to convince you of anything, obviously, but I just like this, the line of conversation with somebody who's in classic. Cedric, to me, has a classic physique. When you look at Cedric, do you see a classic physique?
Yeah, I do see that he is way more similar to those guys than most open bodybuilders, for sure, because he can hit those poses. And he feels how to hit those poses correctly with his body.
Yeah.
Honestly, there are top level guys right now. And they, for example, try to hit the mantis pose or the archer pose. And it just doesn't, you know, they simply hit the bodybuilding pose, like a frontal bicep, and they only extend their arm like this. And that's the archer pose for them.
Yeah.
But if Cedric hits it, he puts his entire body into it and everything flows with the pose, allowing it to make it look like a true vintage physique.
Yeah.
So that's the difference he has. And he has the mass, that's for sure.
Well, the reason I brought up Cedric is because I see you in that same category. Like, I could see you being like a, like, I guess my point that I'm trying to make is, even if bodybuilding doesn't go that way,
mm-hmm.
you can still be extremely successful, because Cedric has kind of carved out his own little piece.
That's true.
Yeah. He's like, I look like this. This is how I look. I don't care how those guys look. And people love him for it. They love that there's a guy that's 280 pounds or 70 pounds, and he still looks like that really classic vintage look.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I wouldn't, if you ever did think of it, I wouldn't let that stop you, because I think you could capture an entire base for yourself.
That's true.
Because nobody else looks like you. You know what I mean?
But honestly, also one of the reasons why I'm not doing it now is because I first want to maximize myself in classic physique and just try to see, can I be the number one? Because I truly believe that, you know, if I am compared to the top six and I can see, then I can be objective about myself. I can see then, okay, am I ever going to be number one or not?
Yeah.
If I really mentally know the truth about that, then I can decide, okay, this is the direction I'm going to go for the future. But for now, I think it's still wide open. So I first want to maximize the classic physique look and this class. Maybe they're going to go up with 5 pounds. It gives me a lot of leeway as well. So who knows what the future may hold, but I do really understand what you're saying, that there are very big classic bodybuilding guys who don't fall within the classic physique class, but are still the open guys, which are a niche on their own, basically.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, man. I love what you're doing. And I love that you've, how can I put it? I love that you've really taken hold of the vintage thing, and that's your thing, and you love it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really cool that you are trying to maximize that and be that guy. Before I let you go, the last question, and I know I've said that 3 times now, but where do you see yourself on Saturday? Do you see yourself being in that first call out?
Yeah. I really believe that with my conditioning right now, if everything goes right, you never know, but goes right, as I look like right now, and I peak correctly, which should happen as well, because I'm not going to do anything weird.
Yeah.
Then I really do believe the top six is possible, especially because some guys can't even join, like Arwaj, and some other good guys can't do the Olympia for various reasons. Yeah. I do think it's wide open, and I don't know what the reason would be if I'm not in the top six, unless everybody is 110%, and and even what I'm bringing right now is not enough, but you just never know with bodybuilding. So I do believe top six is possible, but at, you know, top 10, that's the bare minimum for me.
Yeah.
Top six, that's what I have in my mind.
Okay. Well, Wesley, you know what? We'll bring you back another time when you're not the week before a show and you have more time. We'll talk more about your history and all that other stuff. But for now, I'm going to let you go do your thing and get ready for the weekend. And I appreciate you coming on, man. Thank you so much for the time.
I will. Thank you very much as well. We appreciate your podcast. So it was an honor.
Hey, before you go, is there anywhere that people should go to get vintage clothing or vintage genetic? Is it more than just clothing, or is it just clothing for now?
It's clothing and also training gear, like belts and arm blasters, like the classic arm blasters, you know, wrist wraps, straps.
That's awesome.
So it's a vintagegenetics.com.
Okay. All right. We'll go there and get your stuff, guys. For now, though, have a good weekend, man. I hope you do awesome. And we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, brother.